David, you seem to go into a lot of detail about light. Tell me its connection to some of this.
Well, that's another fascinating aspect of it. So many times you will hear someone say that they saw something out of the corner of their eye.
Right.
And yet when they look directly at it, they don't see anything
there. It's gone. It's not there.
And I've talked to a couple of optometrists. I mean, my optometrist is fascinated by the stuff I'm doing right now. But I've talked to him in detail about how our eye responds to the spectrum of light. And our peripheral vision is sensitive to ultraviolet light, at least in the near ultraviolet light range. Probably part of our flea impulse that we can catch things that, you know, are in that light spectrum. We have started measuring ultraviolet light levels as well as luminance as well as several other light-related functions during these events. And we have found that there are bursts of ultraviolet light associated with these events, which also brings up another whole bucket full of possibilities here. But that part of it is kind of fascinating to me because it explains why some things show up under ultraviolet photography or full spectrum photography or infrared photography, because some of these effects are occurring outside of our normal vision of light. And we need desperately to study these fringe areas of light that we don't perceive with our eyes, and that amazingly digital cameras do perceive into it far more than we do. And with the advent of digital cameras, a lot of anomalies started showing up in people's photographs, anomalies that they didn't see with their eye. Now, a lot of people will come up with all sorts of alternative explanations for these things, and to a certain degree, those explanations hold true, but not in all of them. And this whole thing with the orb question that's been beaten around and thrown about for years and years with people firmly entrenched on either side of the fence.
Yeah. What are they? Are they light refraction? What are they?
Right, exactly. Is it lens flare? Is it dust within 4 inches of the camera lens? And potentially, yes, all of those things hold true. However, I've always found that instead of all orbs being, you know, spirits or all orbs being artifacts of the camera use, somewhere in between probably is where the truth's going to lie. And so we started to figure out a way to look at it seriously and settle it once and for all. And using different aspects of light was a tool for doing that. It turns out that if you take a couple of cameras and set them up in an area in two different spots from two different angles, and you take a photograph of the same area, and something like that shows up in roughly the same place in the room, you can pretty much rule out dust and lens flares being the cause. Well, now you're left with something else. What is it? And that led, of course, to more research. And to the point where I actually built this thing to try to capture one of these things and measure it. And my neighbors, of course, think I am completely insane. But
they must see you do all kinds of things.
You would not believe. My basement sometimes glows green at night. I'm sure they're firmly convinced that I'm mentally deranged.
Or a mad scientist or something.
Yes, actually, I've been called that. So, I came up with using some very simple things that anyone can put together from the hardware store, like PVC pipe, coupling, aluminum screen, and kind of built a sampling device using a small shop vac that I could suck in and sample air and put across the grid that I could measure across the grid. Turns out I burned up a couple of meters because I encountered what I think may be cold plasma. And again, this brings us back to the whole wormhole part of the equation, because the formation of cold plasma would be kind of a byproduct of this thing opening up. So as this book progressed, this is a kind of an interesting story too. As this book progressed and I started looking at all of this data from over the years, it all started to form into this pattern. And while I started out with several theories as to what was going on at the beginning of writing the book, when I got to the end of writing the book, my whole idea of what was going on had completely changed, because it was the first time I literally sat down and digested everything that I had done over the years and come up with a conclusion.
Is anybody else conducting truly a scientific approach to look at this?
Yeah, believe it or not, there are several groups. There's a group called Paranormal Anomalous Research. They are doing kind of parallel studies. There's Rocky Mountain Paranormal Research in Colorado is doing some parallel studies. I'm starting to get a lot of emails and Facebook messages from people who are asking very specific questions about some of the equipment we assembled and how to do it and how to use it. So the goal of getting people more into this line of thought and motivation is starting to materialize, which is also very personally rewarding to me. You know, that people are starting to look at this and say, hey, this is cool. This is interesting. You know, this is something different. This is telling us something. Because, you know, paranormal research has kind of stagnated over the years. You know, I'm sure you've watched some of the offerings on TV where people, you know, squeal and dance up and down when they have a 5 milligauss, you know, jump in their meter in their hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they really have no idea what that means. They assume it's a ghost immediately, and there's no way to know that. You have to know more about that picture than just how strong the field is. You need to know what frequency it is, what the wave looks like. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can use. And part of the motivation with the book was to explain that to people and to offer them a viable alternative to get that information.
Is there or are there ghosts everywhere all around us, or maybe not?
I can't support that notion. I can support that there are places that tend to be very active with this type of manifestation. And those places tend to have a death associated with it, which makes me think maybe a natural process of dying opens this wormhole. Maybe that's part of the trigger. Maybe that's part of the equation that has to happen in order for this to trigger. I mean, we just simply don't know, because they're really – I mean, most of the people doing this are self-funding their research.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, we're working on shoestring budgets, and we're making, you know, pretty good strides. But the field really needs some serious funding to put some serious instrumentation into looking at some of this.
Speaking
stuff.
Of instrumentation, what kind of instruments, what kind of equipment do you use?
Well, I have a lot of pretty typical lab-quality equipment. We do use some EMF detectors, survey meters, radiation meters, Geiger counters, but we also use data loggers and sensors, which to me really is the wave of the future for gathering this stuff, where you have laptop-based equipment. I have an RF spectrum analyzer that's based on a Palm Pilot processor, so that you stick a Palm Pilot in this box, and the box has all the supporting circuitry to make an RF spectrum analyzer, and you can download the scans. I mean, the technology is just incredible now. And these things are expensive to the average person, but they're not that expensive. I mean, for example, a lab-quality RF spectrum analyzer is going to start at around $25,000. For less than $2,000, you can get a handheld one just as accurate based on a Palm Pilot processor.